Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. If you've been a fan of Bear Grease, you know about these turkey hunting outlaws. Well, if those boys had Onyx Hunt, the turkeys would have been in real trouble. The Onyx Hunt app will keep you legal and will ensure that you won't be the next outlaw featured on the Bear Grease podcast. With the up-to-date public and private land ownership, you always know where you can hunt. Combine that with custom waypoints, quick measuring tools to pinpoint a gobbler's location. The Hunt app will help you get on more goblin turkeys this spring. Use the code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your premium or elite membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this turkey season.
And so I called Pawpaw. He goes, "Hey, I'm back here with Mama. She's fixing to be in surgery." And I said, "I need your help. I'm on a turkey. He's down here in the road. I need to know what to do." And I can hear Mama in the background. She's getting ready there, prepping her. And she goes, "Steve, you need to help him get that turkey. You know, you need to help him get that turkey."
It's open mic night at the Bear Grease home fire, and I'm giving the stage to some of the best turkey hunters I know. It's mid-March, the days are getting longer, the Sarvis berry blooms are popping, and the stories are flowing like clear mountain streams. Turkey tales aren't just for entertainment, but they export in words and spirit a picture of the dedication of a unique band of brothers, a tribe of people bonded together by a ground-nesting gobbling bird. These stories give a glimpse into the joys, tribulations, and passions of the American turkey hunter. It's an odd thing that a feathered beast would grip a heart so tightly. It really doesn't even make sense. But a goblin spring turkey is as dynamic of a combination of audio sensation, challenge in the hunt, and visual imagery as there is in the natural world. A strutting gobbler rivals in beauty and mystique a breaching humpback whale in the North Atlantic, a bighorn sheep on a mountain crag, or even the great scenes of the African savanna teeming with migrating herds of ungulates. A goblin turkey is the real deal. Add in the backdrop of the spring woods metamorphizing into brilliant hues of green, and it's almost unreal. On this episode, we're celebrating the wild turkey and the hunt. We'll hear about a white turkey in Tennessee, a story where a hunter caught on fire. It's not a joke. And a turkey that had the gobble shout out of him. And we'll end with a story that might bring a tear to your eye. I really doubt that you're going to want to miss this one. And one more thing before we get going. You can go to the Meat Eater YouTube channel and check out three videos that I made called the Bear Grease Roadshow. There is a video that we did about Warner Glenn, who we also did a podcast about. There's a video about the Folsom Archaeological Site and a bear hunt that I did with a Folsom Point, also something we did on a Bear Grease series. And lastly, there's a video about plot hounds in Appalachia. Go check all that out.
Daddy got his gun up, and the turkey's right there, and all of a sudden he smells something, smells warm, and then he looked down and he sees smoke coming up out of his pocket. He said, "You might be interested to know that pockets not only burn to the outside, they burn to the inside too."
You My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is the Bear Grease Podcast, where we'll explore things forgotten but relevant, search for insight in unlikely places, and where we'll tell the story of Americans who live their lives close to the land. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore. I love turkey stories and always have. The telling of stories is an important part of the culture where I grew up, and maybe it's the same where you came from. A good story is like money in the bank. You can withdraw it when you need it, and it draws interest with time. It gets better the more that it's told. Being a good storyteller, to me, isn't about flashy details and oratory pizzazz. It's about a payoff being delivered to the listener, and it can come in a lot of different ways. Some great stories I've heard come with a monotone delivery and with minimal hand gestures, but the frequency emitted by the teller confronted the listener with the display of moral character, the execution of wit, or the joy, trial, and tragedy of the sliver of time described. Some storytellers carry a contagious passion, and their personal investment in the story is sensed, and all the very best ones have a high degree of that. We all want to listen to folks that have a zeal and passion for life, someone who can describe with clarity what it feels like to look through their eyes. We learn when we see what someone else sees. We want to hear someone who's willing to tell the truth, and authenticity trumps pizzazz every time. We learn how to communicate by listening to other people's stories. Communication is everything in the successful execution of being a human. If you were looking for a great self-help area to focus on in 2023 that would improve every area of your life, increasing your communication skills would be hard to top. And it isn't just a sequence of words. AI can produce words in sequence, but the passion, energy, spirit, and intent behind words give it life and meaning. You're about to hear 8 different stories from turkey chasers from the ages of 19 to 81. And before we get going, just be patient here, my brothers. Stories deliver different kinds of value. Sometimes a turkey story describes a tactic, the behavior of turkeys, or introduces us to a new skill. The story's really functional and it helps us. Sometimes we don't learn much, but we're highly entertained. But one of my favorites is when a story exposes the broader life of the teller. It's usually a small window, but they'll show their cards to you if you're paying attention. Enough rambling, and you boys know I love to do it. I want to hear some turkey stories. And we're coming in hot with this first one with none other than a Bear Grease favorite, Andy Brown of Western Arkansas. He's a masterful woodsman and turkey hunter, and his passion shines through in every story he tells. I know you're going to enjoy this one.
You know, I have been fortunate. I have really been fortunate in my life to be able to have hunted with some really, really good turkey hunters. Of course, had a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, we were serious about what we did, but I mean, we kind of like to gig each other and, you know, have a little fun with each other. But one story, Jim Fite, and he was a dear friend of mine. He always called me Andrew. That's what he always said, Andrew. He wanted to go turkey hunting. Never been before in his life. And that's back when I was really eat up with it. And of course, where we lived at that time was right in the heart and soul of it. I mean, I could stand on my deck any morning from the 10th day of March till May 1 and hear turkeys gobbling from my deck. And what was funny about that, I had all those turkeys out there and I'd drive 20 miles to go hunting. You know, I mean, just stupid stuff like that. But I had places I liked to hunt and guys I liked to hunt with. But anyway, Jim wanted to go, and he'd never been. And he did have some camouflage. And I think he borrowed a pair of gloves and a face mask for me. And he came over one morning, and I can remember this just like it was yesterday. He had a Sweet 16 Browning shotgun. But he shows up, and we go in there north of the house and pulled it on the side of the main mountain on the north side and got up in there. And that, back in those days, that's when there wouldn't be a leaf on the side of that mountain that wasn't turned over by turkey scratching. I mean, there was, people would not believe it that didn't know it. That was like in, we moved out there in 84. But that mountain, it just like you took a tiller in there and just till the leaves. But anyway, we pulled in there on the mountain where I thought we were going to be in the chips. And, of course, naturally, you know how that goes. You're trying to be the big, bad turkey hunter, and you take somebody that's never been, you get up there, and the turkeys ain't gobbling. You know, there's just mornings that they're over the hump. You know, you're on one side of the mountain, and they're on the other side of the mountain. Or some mornings, they just don't want to gobble. But anyway, we hadn't heard a thing, and I told Jim. Of course, I had to go to work. It was before work one morning, and I said, Jim, we'll just have to do it every day. It's just not working out. So we head back off this long leg, and that down at the end of it is an old well down there. And we got to the old well. I heard a turkey gobble down in the low woods, kind of northeast of us over there. I said, you hear that? And he said, thought it did. About that time, he gobbled again. And, man, it was about probably 8:30. That dude put in over there. I mean, gobbling every breath. And I said, come on, let's go. I said, we're going to kill that dude. I mean, he's just one of them. You just tell the way he's gobbling, you're going to kill him. And when we got down there where he was at, he was in an old road. There's a kind of a big ridge in there, and there's an old road come off the south side of it there. And I got old Jim. We didn't stay on the main road. We kind of got off the road. There wasn't really a place you could get and shoot down the road, but I knew that turkey was going to come down that road. And so right off the road, there was a little old kind of a dry branch there and a hump, just a little old ridge there. And I got Jim out there, and he laid down on his belly. Of course, I put in on that turkey, and he just gobbling every breath. And I mean, I was showing out a little bit. I was hammering him, you know, and everything was just like you wanted it. Just drumming and gobbling. And I got behind a little old white oak, probably wasn't 10 inches in diameter. And I knew I didn't have to hide. You know, this is going to be short and sweet. Anyway, I look out there, and here comes that turkey down the road. He's all blowed up. He comes right in there, and there's a trail that comes in. And Jim's standing there, or laying there on his belly, and he's got his gun on that turkey. And that turkey just kept a-coming right to him. And he got down in that little old deal there, and I don't know, Jim moved or something, and of course the turkey went to clucking, and about the time he went to clucking, he went to flying, and I knew then that Jim wasn't going to shoot. And so anyway, of course I cut drive at him, never cut a feather on him. And I said, I was being out of shape, you know, because I mean, it was a sure enough deal. I said, Jim, how come you didn't shoot that turkey? He said, Andrew, he said, all I could see was his head. I said, well, Jim, that's what you're supposed to be shooting at, you know, is his head. But yeah, that's all I could see was his head. Oh, my goodness.
All I could see was his head. It's hard not to laugh with Andy when he hits the punchline of his story. On this next one, we're in for another treat, because it's being told by none other than Bear Grease Hall of Famer Roy Clark of East Tennessee. Mr. Roy is in his mid-70s, and he's as good a hound breeder and bear hunter as God ever made. As a matter of fact, I just made a video about him and his plot hounds that just came out on the Meat Eater YouTube channel. You should check it out. What a lot of people wouldn't know about Mr. Roy is that he's a dang good turkey hunter. He doesn't talk about it much, but a few years ago, I asked if he'd had a good spring, and he told me he'd killed 5 gobblers, 3 in Tennessee and a couple in North Carolina. Here's Mr. Roy's story of the white turkey.
I was going to tell about a East Tennessee turkey hunting event above home. I heard about this white turkey through my brother. And I know the 2 boys that supposedly seen the turkey, and they was out drinking, and I know both of them, but I know one of them was pretty truthful, so I went and talked to him about it, and he told me what they seen and where they seen it, and so I told my son-in-law, Scott Childress, about it, and me and him went up there to see if we could see it or find it, and we went up there one morning before daylight, and we heard it a gobbling, and we was close to it. But we worked our way before daylight and got close enough that we could see the tree it's in. And when it got daylight, we could see it was had a lot of white on it. And it gobbled on the roost and stuff. And then when it finally flew off the roost, instead of flying down, it flew out of there. Flew out of sight, and we never did hear it no more. And we wound up going back several times, and every time we'd go, we'd locate it, and we'd get close to it, but it would sail out and leave, and then it wouldn't gobble after it hit the ground, and we would never know where it went to. We done the slate, and we done the box, and we done mouth calls. We done everything, and we hunted it for 2 weeks. On the evenings it, after he come in from work, and when he was off, we'd go over morning and evening. And we went up our one Friday morning, and it was roosting on top of the mountain. We come up that mountain and got under the tree, but like I said, every time it had just sail out and sailed, you couldn't see it. So we went back on Saturday morning, and it was a gobbling up on top of that mountain again. And I told Scott, I said, I ain't going up there no more. I ain't climbing that mountain for it. And it sailing out there, I said, you can if you want to. So he decided he was going up there. And I just stayed down there where we'd parked at. And I walked around the road till I got straight down under where it's at, and went up in the woods and got me a place where I could still see the road, but right under it. And the process of hit a getting daylight and hit a goblin up there, I hear this hen. And she was in a tree just 25 or 30 foot from me. So directly that Tom sailed owl iron, I'd say it was 100 foot over top of the trees and over top of my head, and it just sailed right on by me and just kept right on going till it went out of sight. Well, I thought to myself, it's gone again, and I tried to called Scott on the walkie-talkie to tell him it's gone, but he didn't answer me. He didn't know whether it flew down up there or what he'd done. He just knowed it come out of the tree. And I decided I'd just sit there and wait till that hen, see what that hen done. So I sat there, and after a while, she just eased off of the roost and just barely sailed down toward the road and sailed around the road just like gliding and 10 foot of the road, and going around the road the way the road lay, and went out of my sight around the curve. And when she did, I got up and got all my stuff together and thought I'd start making my way back towards the vehicle. And I got down there, but I was going to watch, see if I could see that hen anywhere. And I was coming around the road, and I walked around the curve, and I looked, and I seen that sucker strutting out there in the road. And I got on a little bit closer there. I stayed to the side of the curve where it couldn't see me, and I got just a little bit closer, and I could see that hen was out there squatted down out there on the edge of the grass, and that Tom was strutting around her. Well, I just stepped to the side there and got all my stuff off and got ready, and I'd peep around there where I could see him, and when he turned his back to me and was strutting back away from me, I took 2 steps out in the road, and he strutted around and up the side of that hen, turned and strutted back down and started back around towards me, and I let him have it and folded him up right there in the road. And I went out there, and it was a flopping. I didn't want to tear its feathers up, and so I got it by both back legs and held it up, and Scott was hollering at me on the radio, did I get it, did I get it? And I had to hold the turkey with both back feet holding it. And he finally quit there directly, and I called Scott and told him I had it, and he come down there. And we've seen turkeys spangled up and turkeys with white on them and stuff all been hens, but this is the first time that we ever seen that was colored up with white tips on its feathers and white spot on both sides of its wings, and actually a pretty turkey. And so I wanted to have it fixed because I knowed that I never could get another one fixed. And Mark Dufresne up in Maine, a buddy of mine, he took it and fixed it, and he mounted a lot of stuff, and he actually said it was the prettiest one he ever seen, and I think it was, and that sort of ended my turkey hunting. I didn't think I could ever top that, so I just sort of retired from turkey hunting.
That white turkey put Mr. Roy into retirement. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but the gobblers in East Tennessee are probably better off on account of it. Mr. Roy is a national treasure and a dear friend of mine. I got a kick out of how he said the boys that first saw that white turkey were out drinking, but he knew one of them was pretty truthful. That's good.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free. In or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. You guys know that I'm starting to think, and have thought for a long time really, that my buddy Brent Reeves is actually an undercover game warden. Just the other day, he sent me an onyx pin of a roosted gobbler that was awfully tempting to go after. Fortunately, my hunt app is filled with different color-coded waypoints marking gobblers from prior spring seasons. With a few years of past hunts documented in the app, I have a bunch of places to find goblin birds this year, so I don't have to hunt that bird that Brent is trying to lure me into hunting. And it's not just Arkansas. I got plans to hunt throughout the country this year, and the hunt app is the one tool that comes with me on every hunt, no matter where I end up. Try the Hunt app this season to help you find more birds. Use the code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your premium or elite membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. Man, we got the stories stacked in here deep. Our next story is told by Mississippi native, author, former Ole Miss football player, and turkey hunter extraordinaire, Mr. Robert Hit Neal Jr. He's 81 years young, and this is an old story about his dad he calls the Flaming Turkey Hunter.
On Woodstock Island, hunting cabin that we had over there, which had been a sharecropper's cabin, is probably now 100 years old, made out of cypress. And I was standing on the porch of the cabin because the weekend was about over, and my brother and I had killed turkeys, and I was sweeping the porch off, and Bo was inside packing and cleaning up, and my daddy, Big Robert, but Big Robert didn't look like John Wayne. John Wayne looked like Big Robert. He was about 6'2½", big, wide-shouldered man, trim waist. You know, he was that kind of guy. And he hadn't had any luck the whole turkey season. This was the last weekend of the season. Bo and I, that's my brother, Bo and I had killed 7 turkeys between us. And so the pressure was really on Daddy. He hadn't even gotten a shot. So he was still in the woods hunting, And I'm out on the porch sweeping it off, and then I hear the Jeep coming, and he pulls up into the yard, and he sits there, cuts the Jeep off, and he just sits there, and you see his hands gripping the wheel. And so I put the broom against the wall and went down the steps and walked over to the Jeep. I think he maybe wants me to help carry his turkeys in or something like that, you know, and got there and no turkeys. And he's sitting there and his jaw just working, you know, how that muscle comes out the jawbone just working. And I said, is anything wrong? He said, where's Bo? I said, he's inside sweeping the cabin. You want me to go get him? And he said, no. This story's too good to keep, but I'll be if I'll tell both of you at the same time. And he told me that he'd been out there in the woods about 10 o'clock, hadn't heard of a turkey or seen a turkey, and Daddy smoked about 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And he's sitting there on a log, and he gets his cigarette out, and he puts it in his mouth, and then he puts the cigarette package back in the pocket, and he gets the lighter out, and he lights it, and he's sticking the lighter back in his pocket when he looked up, and a gobbler standing about 20 yards away just stepped out from behind a big persimmon tree. And turkeys are real wary birds. He knew that you ought not to go breathing big clouds of blue smoke at them when they were standing there looking at you. And so he just froze right there with his hand in his pocket, put the lighter back, and didn't exhale until the turkey took another step or two and got behind a tree. And then he exhaled and tongued a cigarette out the corner of his mouth and put his hand on his gun. But before he could get it up, the turkey stepped out behind the tree, and he's walking real slow now, looking for that hen he's been hearing call. And when the turkey gets behind the next tree, Daddy got his gun up and got ready, and the turkey's right there. And all of a sudden, he smells something, smells warm. And then the left side of his chest starts just horrible pain. And he looked down, and he sees smoke coming up out of his pocket when he had tongued the cigarette out the corner of his mouth. It went down in his shirt pocket. He said, you might be interested to know that pockets not only burn to the outside, they burn to the inside too. And his chest is broiling, and he sees the first flickers of flame coming up from the pocket. I've actually still got the jumpsuit. It's got a hole in the pocket where it burnt. And he's waiting. He said he remembered thinking at that time. Now, he's a dedicated turkey hunter, you know. It's like one of those moments when everything happens, and yet afterwards it seems like you actually thought it out, but it all happened in a split second. He said, I remember thinking at that time that I could either shoot the turkey or I could put myself out. And of course, for a dedicated turkey hunter, no decision at all. He sat there and let his shirt burn and him in it while he waits for the turkey to come out from behind the flame tree, and finally the stick steps out behind the tree, and he shoots, and he throws the gun down and beats his chest, and he puts the fire out, and he had missed the turkey. And he said the turkey didn't even run. He just stood there and said, what are you doing? You know, because flaming turkey hunters are very rare in the woods, with Smokey the Bear enjoying the popularity that he had back then. And so he came on back to the cabin, and the jumpsuit is still hanging up there. That's the flaming turkey story.
That was good, man. That was good.
I wasn't expecting that. I can just envision flames flickering up in the corner of Mr. Neal's eye as he squeezed the trigger on that Mississippi longbeard. I wonder if that's ever happened to another turkey hunter before. Our next storyteller is exactly 62 years younger than Mr. Neal. Coy House is 19 years old, and he lives in western Arkansas. I grew up with his mom and dad, and he's a great young man for a lot of reasons, one of which is that he's a passionate turkey hunter. This story is about the first bird he ever killed completely on his own. Well, almost on his own. Here's Coy.
Well, I've been turkey hunting for a while. Me and Steve, my grandpa, everybody knows Steve pretty well. If he's turkey hunting, I'm with him 9 times out of 10. I fell in love with it, and we just love to do it together. Well, this particular story I'm going to tell you about, turkey season had opened, I think it was that week. So I'd have been 14. The kind of kicker to the story is, so Grandma, Mama, Kathy, she was in the middle of having a heart cath put in. in the hospital. So Pawpaw wasn't hunting. He wasn't, you know, he couldn't go. So I decided I'm gonna go. We had a private spot. We call Nelson's. We have some cows over there and stuff. So I went back in the cut. I had got there late. It was probably, it was breaking light. And again, I was 14, wasn't supposed to be over there, you know, driving, but it wasn't far from the house. It's just a little truck ride. Well, I got back in there and I give out and I just let an old hoot out, you know. Oh, and he just right over there. I mean, he just like it was textbook. So I get in there and I get where, you know, I've learned watching from Pawpaw, get above the turkey, get him off the roost, you know, call minimum on the roost. He'll fly down to you. So I get up there, I get above him. He's on the roost. I hoot him again. He gobbles. So I get set up. I just let out a few yelps, and he cuts me off right there. He's probably 50, 60 yards. It's kind of thicker in there, some pine trees. Well, he gobbled, he gobbled, he gobbled. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of shut up. Well, I seen a hen pitch off, and she pitched off down an old cut in the logging road. I seen her. Here went another one, and here went another one. Well, I didn't hear him. And so I figured he pitched off with them. So I just called, and sure enough, he's down there in that road, and he just gobbled right at me right there. So I didn't know what to do, really. I was kind of, man, I tried my techniques out at first that I thought was supposed to be right. And so I called Pawpaw. He goes, hey, I'm back here with Mama. She's fixing to be in surgery. And I said, I need your help. I'm on a turkey. He's down here in the road. I need to know what to do. And I can hear Mama in the background. She's getting ready there, prepping her. And she goes, Steve, you need to help him get that turkey. You know, you need to help him get that turkey. And so he says, well, you need to get around that turkey, figure out where he's going and get around that turkey and get up there above him, cut him off. He said, do maybe little calling, maybe if not any at all type deal, just kind of let it play out, let him come in. Well, so by the time I had got back around, I called and that turkey was already heading up the hill. I mean, he was gobbling. He just gobble, 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 gobble. So I did what he said after the first time. I maneuvered around, and then once I realized the turkey was going up the hill, I call him again immediately. And I say, Pawpaw, you got to have to walk me through this. I need to know. So the turkey's already beat me up there. So what do I do? He said, you need to climb the hill, and he said, you need to get as close as you can. And I said, but Pawpaw, I said, it's just like a two-year-old cut. I said, it's pretty open. I said, the turkey's going to see me. He said, well, you need to get up that hill right before it breaks off. And he said, you need to get in, you need to dig in. He said, once you dig in, if he answers you, you know, he might break free away from them hens. He said, you might have to sit there till 11 o'clock. So I got up there and I dug in and I called. Nothing. Not a peep, not nothing. So I called Pawpaw a third time. I'd been sitting there an hour. I ain't heard a turkey in an hour. He said, you got to be patient. I said, Pawpaw, I'm trying. You know, it was one of those things. I was just learning how to turkey hunt on my own. This is my first time. So I was all fired up. Didn't want to overcall. Didn't want to undercall. He said, dig in. He said, just give him a few yelps here and there. He said, and if he doesn't answer, he said, your last resort is to call the hens. See if you can get the hens fired up and get them to come. So I sat there, didn't hear nothing. Well, this dove, you know how a dove makes a noise that, you know, when it flies off? Well, it flew off and he gobbled about 50 yards, 60 yards over the break. I mean, I heard him. Well, so I called and he wouldn't answer me. And I said, he's with him. I knew, you know, I knew enough about it. I knew he was with hens. So I just started, I mean, just going crazy, just pucking and purring and just fighting purrs. And I was, you know, I was giving everything I could. Well, about not even 2 minutes later, I see this head coming. Here it comes. Here comes another one. Well, here comes some hens. They started, you know, feeding off through there real quietly. And so I just turned my head and gave them a purr. And here they come looking. Well, sure enough, here behind an old tree, kind of the dead tree leaned over, here he come, full strut. He come through there, and I said, oh, it's on. You know, it's one of those deals. I was getting fired up. Well, the hens started coming towards where I was at, and he was kind of circling off over there. The hens got so close, they were probably 10 yards from me, and I was in some brush. I couldn't even breathe. I was afraid they were going to see me. I had my eyes closed. I had one eye closed and one eye looking down. I was just trying not to move. It was one of those situations. Well, one hen, she kind of threw her head up and she just, about that time that gobbler threw his head up and kind of looked that way. He was every bit, I guarantee you, 60 yards. And I knew, I said, it's my only chance. So I put it right on him and I shot and he went to flopping. And so I got on the phone and I said, Bubba, I just killed him. I got him, you know, and he's like, oh my gosh. You know, it's one of those things. I was super excited. It was my first turkey, but you know, he walked me through it on the phone. I mean, you know, it was just one of those things. It's kind of crazy at the same time. But when I got up to the turkey, he had a 12-inch beard, not even lying. He had about an inch spurs, still the biggest bird I've ever killed. Old bird. I mean, it's just one of those things you couldn't beat. I mean, it's just one of those mornings, fine crisp morning. You just can't top them. So after I got up to the turkey and everything, I called Papa back. And he had told me Grandma had just got out of surgery. And she did. She had just got out. And she actually, you know, I wanted to talk to her. And so I talked to her. And she made it through. Everything was good. She's still doing great today. I mean, she's young. She acts young. And, you know, she just gets around good. And everything's good. But she was beyond thrilled that I was able to get that turkey. And she's not a turkey hunter, but she was so excited that I was able to get that turkey.
Now that's a good story, and there are two things that I thought were funny. I chuckled when he said, I ain't even lying, about the beard being 12 inches long. And did you catch that he drove by himself to his turkey hunting spot when he was 14? That gives you a glimpse into the non-hunting world of the storyteller. And for all the Karens out there, which I doubt there are many listening to Bear Grease, I know about where he was and where he went, and it was just a short drive down a lonely country road. And in my book, that's some decent parenting. You know what? Really, I doubt Juju would have been too happy about that either. Juju's my mom. But Karens and Juju's are different. Juju's cast their disapproval out of genuine love. And when the risk taker completes the task, despite their Juju's approval, it actually adds gravitas to the deed. I would even bet Coy's mama wasn't thrilled about him driving by himself that morning, but as I understand it, Karens don't want you to do stuff just kind of out of spite, kind of like they're the referees of the world. So it's okay to be Juju's and mama's, and I apologize to all the sweet, genuine people of the world named Karen who've been unjustly trapped in the cultural catchphrase. Juju actually has a sister named Karen, my sweet aunt. So sorry, Aunt Karen. Anyhow, our next storyteller is going to make you forget the last 30 seconds because he's the antithesis of any cultural catchphrase. Hank Burdine is from Chatham, Mississippi. He's a published author and one of the guardians of the legacy of Holt Collier. And kind of like Matthew McConaughey is a minister of culture in Texas, he got that whole playbook from the way Hank Burdine knows, loves, and speaks about Mississippi. You're going to enjoy this story from Hank.
I had a big hunting club place, a family place down middle of the Delta, close to Leroy Percy Park. A couple thousand acres that was the north boundary of Leroy Percy Park. And Leroy Percy Park was about 4,500 acres, and then that was attached to Yazoo Wildlife Refuge. About 14,000 acres, so we had a contiguous wildlife preserve. And had a cabin right down there, and I had turkeys. And it got to where I'd leave the windows open at night in my bedroom, my cabin, and my wife said, honey, why don't you, it's cold, close that window. I said, no, baby. She said, well, why you want to keep that window? I said, well, one reason, make you snuggle up a little closer to me. I said, but I'll hear them turkeys in the morning. That'll wake me up, and I'll go turkey hunting. Well, I got to where I knew my turkeys. I knew where they were. Knew what gravel they were graveling on for the gizzards. Got to know them pretty well. Well, I had a flock that was easing over into the state park. I wasn't supposed to be hunting over in there. But I had a big corner that went right up in the middle of it. I said, well, I've been hearing some good turkeys down in yonder. So I got up and went and got set up. And the gun I was shooting, my daddy was a goose hunter. Had a big boat back in 1938 and the 40s after they channelized the river. And he goose hunted with it's called a Winchester Model 12 Heavy Duck. It was a 3-inch Magnum, full choke, 30-inch barrel. Legendary duck gun and goose gun back then. Well, I didn't duck hunt with it, but I turkey hunted with it because with that full choke barrel, it was a turkey getter. So I get set up back down in that corner that morning, and I'd gotten my blind set up, and all of a sudden, there was a turkey started gobbling. I never had a turkey gobble as much in my life as that turkey. He gobbled on the roof. He gobbled coming off the roof. When he hit the ground, he was gobbling his head off. A couple more turkeys were gobbling out there, too. I was hooting like a hoot owl trying to get them going. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and before I'd even really got settled in there good, here that turkey came. He all but jumped in the blind with me, gobbling his head off, strutting, carrying on, acting a fool like turkeys do in the springtime like that. And when I went to throw my gun up, it scared him. He jumped up, took off flying. I got one shot off at him as he flew into the park. Well, I knew I felt like I hit that turkey. I knew I had. I hadn't been able to, but that gun's pretty tight choke. Tight choke gun like that. Well, that upset me bad. I didn't hear him fall, didn't hear him flapping. I spent half a day looking for that turkey. Never could find him. Never could find him. I went back to the house dejected and wore out and just upset that, because that was too good a turkey to lose. So the next morning, I said, well, I'm going to go right back where I was because there are more birds in there. So I did. And I sat down. I hooted one time, didn't hear a gobble. Hooted again, didn't hear nothing. Sun started coming up. I went to yelping a little bit. All of a sudden, I look up, and here comes the turkey with about a 10 and a half, 11 inch beard. He's strutting. He got his feathers fanned out. He doing all this stuff, his neck out. He ain't said a word. Ain't said a word. Run right straight up within 15 yards of me. I was able to get my gun up right on his head as he stuck it out. And he'd be sticking his head out like a goblin, but he wouldn't say nothing. He just quiet. He stuck that head out that last time, boom, I got him right in the head. Didn't hit him anywhere but in the head. Well, I went and got him. I went back to the house. My wife came by. Well, you got you. I said, well, yeah, but this ain't the one I wanted. I said, it just still upsetting me so bad that I was going to lose that one from the day before. So I started cleaning that turkey. Head shot total. Nothing in his chest. Nothing anywhere. I went to cleaning the feathers off his back end. It was slap full of copper-coated number fours. That's the turkey that I had shot at the day before flying off, but it upset him so bad when he came in that next morning, I done shocked the gobble out of him. He was not going to open his mouth. That was it. He was still as hot and ready to trot as he could be. But he knew what happened the day before when he opened his mouth. So that's the turkey I shot the gobble out of. And here's a fine one.
Hat tip to Hank Burdine. I like the twofold reason he left his window open during the turkey season. That's a good one. Our next story is told by none other than the old Ozark Mountain turkey hunter himself, Mo Shepherd. They say one of his legs grew slightly longer than the other because of all the side hilling he's done, slipping around on these steep limestone hills chasing gobbles. His stories always have a turkey hunting lesson embedded inside of them. Here's Mo.
Well, this turkey story starts in late April. I was hunting the Ozark Mountains out on public land. It started on one morning. I went out a big mountain ridge and heard a bird gobble a couple of times. I just kept walking out this ridge top, but I only heard him gobble two or three times that morning. I never heard him anymore, but the whole time I was out there that morning, across the creek on the other mountain, there was a couple of birds. I don't know if they were answering me or if they were just gobbling, but I heard them several times. But it was too far to try to go that morning, so I just stayed in there and hunted till midday, walked back out, ate me a snack, decided, well, I'm going to go over there on the side of the mountain. I knew, in fact, there was a logging road where they'd logged in there the year before that I could walk around. So I got over there mid-afternoon and started walking around that road, and I'd stop and call like I do. I do that a lot of evening when I hunt of evening, and I'll just periodically call a little bit, see if I can get something to answer me. And what makes that good for me is, even if it ain't good that day, you call an area like that, if you don't overcall too much, just like a turkey moving his way around the mountain, a lot of times I'll go back in there the next day and gobblers will be in that area where I've done that calling the evening before. But anyway, this day, it didn't work like that. But once I thought I heard a gobbler across the creek on the side where I was at that morning. Well, I started making my way back around the mountain and started calling a little bit louder, see if I could get one to gobble on the side I was at. Well, that bird on the other side of the mountain started answering me. And I'd call. Sometimes he'd answer, and sometimes he wouldn't. Well, I got pretty much straight across from him, and there was a log laying in there where they'd logged in there. I thought, well, this would be a good place just to sit here for a little bit and see if maybe one comes in. And I got set up there, and this bird answers me across the creek a long ways over there, but nothing on the side on. So I'd wait a little bit. I'd call a little more, and it's getting later then. It's getting, you know, probably 45 minutes, maybe an hour before the sun was going down. So I got up and made my way down the logging road this little piece. Something caught my eye, and I looked out in the canyon there over the creek between me and that other mountain, and I could see something in there, and then I realized it was a turkey flying. And then I realized it looked like a big turkey flying. And then when it got close, it landed in that log land, and it was a big old gobbler. It was the one that had been a gobbling at me. I just froze. I didn't know what else to do. Well, he lands. He just went into strut mode with that tail fan out, and he turned that tail fan towards me. I was probably 100 yards from that log landing. When he turned that fan, I just dove into the bushes there and got hid. And then I do know he started gobbling a few times. Well, it's getting later. The sun's getting closer to being down. I made a few calls, and he gobbled straight out there, but he didn't come on in. Well, it got a little bit later. He walks to the far end of that log landing and sails up in a tree right below it, just in a big old tree there, a big old pine tree. I can still remember it. Them that has them big pines, got them big old crooked limbs coming out of them. He just lit up on one of them limbs there and gobbled several times, and I still just stayed put. I waited till it got plumb dark. He gobbled several times. So I eased my way out of there. I thought, I've got you, buddy. Next morning, this will be real simple. So next morning, I got way in there way early. But I knew right where I was going. I didn't use a light or anything. I made my way in there. Thought, well, I'm going to set up at the end of this log land. I don't want to get on the end where he's at because I might break a stick. It might spook him or anything. If they hear noise, I think they spook real easy in the darkness like that and won't come to wherever they hear the sticks break or whatever. So I set up on within gun range of the log landing, and I sat there a while, and I sat there a while, and I didn't hear nothing. No gobbles, no nothing. It's just barely breaking light, but it was light enough that a turkey should have gobbled if they were going to. I thought, maybe he flew out of here. Maybe something bust him out of the tree. A hoot owl run him out of the tree, or a bobcat or whatever, you know, may run him out of the tree. Thought, well, I'm going to make some really, this real soft yelps. And if he's there, he'll answer this. Well, I didn't even get the second little out. And that dude, I hear his wings pop, and he sails down that log land. It's still so dark, I can't even see him. And he starts gobbling. And there I am sitting in the pitch dark nearly. I mean, it's light, but you can't see 20 yards in front of you. And I watch out there where he's at. I don't call anymore because I don't want him coming to me. And it as dark as it was. And I sat there and I sat there and he just gobbles and he gobbles and he gobbles. He's on the ground. That's why I said he flew down on the ground and is gobbling and I guess strutting, but I couldn't see him. And then all of a sudden I see something moving and it's the white of his head where he's strutting. And I can see a little bit, then it go away. He's probably in gun range of me, but it's still too dark to shoot. And I thought, just stay here. Just stay here. I thought, maybe I should call. I thought, no, I don't need to call yet because it's still too dark. I don't want him getting in gun range if he's not in there yet. Well, all of a sudden, the white head disappears, and I don't hear anything. And he don't gobble. I thought, he's leaving, so I got to do something other. So I just made a few soft calls. When I did, he answered me right back. But it's still fairly dark, but he's farther out away from me. He's probably out of the log landing by then. And it starts getting light, and then I see him. He's plumb out in the road past the log landing. The opposite end of the log landing for me. The log landing is probably 100 yards across it, maybe 80, something like that. I thought, well, I got to do some sweet talking to him because he's been there strutting and I ain't. So I tried some of my stuff and started calling. And finally, here he comes. He turns and starts coming towards me. And by the time he gets in the middle of that log landing, I can see him pretty good then. It's plenty of light to shoot, but he's not in what I feel good range. And he just stops there like they do. Stops and spins and turns around and spins. I thought, do I need to do anything? No, I'm going to be quiet. Because if I say anything, he's liable to just stay where he's at. So I sit there for probably 5 minutes, didn't say a thing. He just drops out of strut and just starts walking towards me. Gets in good gun range, and I raise my old gun I've had for 40 years I've been turkey hunting with and shoot and get him, and he's a big old mature gobbler. And it was a really memorable hunt because I've never seen a gobbler fly down when it was that dark like that. So, yeah, that was a heck of a hunt.
That turkey flew all the way across that holler to try to roost near that hen that he heard calling. Little did he know that it was just old Mo. You can learn a thing or two from that story.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free. in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. You guys know that I'm starting to think, and have thought for a long time really, that my buddy Brent Reeves is actually an undercover game warden. Just the other day, he sent me an onyx pin of a roosted gobbler that was awfully tempting to go after. Fortunately, my hunt app is filled with different color-coded waypoints marking gobblers from prior spring seasons. With a few years of past hunts documented in the app, I have a bunch of places to find goblin birds this year, so I don't have to hunt that bird that Brent is trying to lure me into hunting. And it's not just Arkansas. I got plans to hunt throughout the country this year, and the hunt app is the one tool that comes with me on every hunt, no matter where I end up. Try the Hunt app this season to help you find more birds. Use the code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your premium or elite membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. Our next storyteller is another born and bred Ozarkian, and he came by his turkey hunting passion honest. From his house, he has a 360-degree view of some of the prettiest mountains known to man. He's grown up in the heart of some great turkey hunting, and he's a real woodsman and turkey hunter. This story, however, takes place in Kansas. Here's Richard Campbell of Newton County, Arkansas.
All right, so me and Mr. Brown, Mr. David Brown, we were out in Kansas hunting. It was probably mid-April or... But we were out there hunting, and we was driving down the highway. Of course, they got a lot of lakes and core land that you can hunt on around them lakes. And there was a park there on this one lake, and when we pulled in there, there was three or four big old jakes walking around in that park. And the lake wasn't, it was probably 150, 200 yards wide there, and there's like it may have been an island, I'm not sure, but there's land across there. So they rose, and they flew across that lake. And David asked me, he says, now, just what would you do if you shot a turkey and it got out in the lake? I said, I ain't going out in that lake after a turkey. And that's kind of how it went on there. Well, I don't know if it was that day or the next day. We were coming back up the road we'd been hunting, and across the road from this same lake, there's a big old farmland. And we looked out there, and there's this big old gobbler out there strutting around out there in the middle of that field. And Dave says, let's pull off here at this ramp. There's a ramp that went down to the lake there, and just see if that old turkey will gobble. We got out there, and we stopped, and I called, and here a minute, the old turkey jarred down. And, well, we stood around there talking, and the old turkey just kept gobbling. I called another time, too, just fooling around there. And I told him, I said, David, I think that turkey is coming. And
He says, I'll go on up the road. You get down here and on this core land and see if you can kill him, see if you can call him up. And this was he's right beside he's a busy highway. And I get down there over the hill, out away from the highway and, down towards that lake. And I sitting there calling, and I could hear the old turkey over across the highway gobbling. He's just getting closer and closer, and he gobbled here in a minute. And I said, well, he's over there at that fence. Here in a minute, he gobbled, and I looked up, and he's standing up there in the highway. And these cars were running up down the road. And I thought, well, so he walks down there. And, of course, he was up there at the highway, and he comes kind of down that off-ramp. He gets down there to where I could shoot him, but it's real brushy and stuff. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to wait. Don't even let him get on down here a little bit. And so he just kept getting closer, and he walks down there, and it's finally, I've got to shoot or something. I find me a halfway open spot, and he's probably not 15 yards. And I shoot, and I hit him, but he starts trying to fly off, and he tries to fly across the lake. Well, he flies out there probably 100 yards in the lake and lands in the lake. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is, are you going to go out in that lake and get that turkey? David asked me that. I thought, well, here I go. Well, the old turkey, he hit the water, and he starts swimming right back to me, right back towards where I'm at. I thought, well, this is great. I'll let him get over here to the bank, and then I'll shoot him, and I'll just walk down and pick him up. And to top all this off, I don't know if I just put one shell in the gun or two, but I'd shot the one. Well, he comes back, and he hits dirt, and I shoot and miss him again because he's running when he hits the dirt. And I am without a shell. Anyways, he runs back over across the highway, right out through the field, and I never did get that turkey. Now, that'd be hard to make up, wouldn't it?
That would be hard to make up, Richard. Can you imagine calling a turkey across a busy highway? When Richard's buddy David tells this story, he says the turkey waited for several cars to pass, looking both ways before he crossed, and then for the darn thing to land in the lake, just like David had thought the day before, is wild. And I hate it when they get away, but we'll hope that bird made it to another spring, and I bet he didn't leave that private land again. And before we move on, I want y'all to hear Richard's suite of natural voice calls. He's really good. Hit it, Richard.
All right, this will be by Barred Owl. Crow call. Yep.
That's about as good as it gets. And once again, my theory on natural voice callers rings true. They're usually really good turkey hunters. I want to end with a special story from a man that I just met named Garvin Gibbons. Like the storytellers before him, he's from deep in the Ozarks of Arkansas. I think you'll hear a humble, somber, yet passionate tone in Garvin's voice. He's an extremely accomplished hunter. His wall is full of big whitetails, and he's killed 23 elk out west with his bow. He elk hunted from 1984 until 2008, but I've got to let you in on something from the start. Since 2009, Garvin has been in a wheelchair. Here's Garvin's story about his son's first gobbler, which happened before 2009.
My son's name's Trevor, and he was 8 years old, and I put him in for the draw, early permit draw, and he drew a tag. And so I went over before season and scouted one day and knew where a few turkeys were at. So we get up and go over, drive over that morning, and we go down one of the cut lanes there, kind of like a fire break there, and we hear a turkey. And anyway, we get set up, and the turkey comes right off the limb, and he comes up, and he gets probably maybe 30, 35 yards. And I can see the turkey really good, and Trev can just get bits and pieces of him. And finally, the old turkey gets nervous and walks off. But after I kind of survey what's going on here, I always set him right between my legs, you know, so I can communicate with him. And if we need to turn, we can kind of twist together. And that way I can just lean up by his head and kind of coach him. You know, he's not over to my side and stuff. But what I got to realize is I'm setting up higher than an 8-year-old, and I can see things that he can't. So he didn't get a real good look at it, and it walked off. And anyway, we go on, and a little bit we hear some more, and we set up, and I call it three Jakes. And I had him right up in his lap and stuff. But, you know, this is his first rodeo. And anyway, I kept them up there for probably 5 minutes, and they kind of got nervous going back and forth. And he never would shoot. And so when they finally walked off, I told him, I said, son, you know, if you get it on his head, just pull the trigger. Not all the times everything's going to be perfectly still. And he was kind of down in his mouth, and we went on, and it was getting up kind of into the day, and I struck a turkey, and it was across a big hollow. And we set up on him, and I put a decoy out, and it dropped off real steep in the hollow, and the turkey was just on the other side, and he was answering me good. And finally, there was a turkey back kind of to her right and kind of behind us, and that turkey really got gobbling well. So this turkey kind of got quiet, and the turkey behind us kind of got gobbling a lot better, and I could tell he was coming toward us. So we got up and we moved probably 20 or 25 yards, and as we were walking, this turkey gobbled that was across from us, and I asked Trev, I said, where was he at? And the turkey was coming to us all the time, and he got down low in the hollow there, and so we sat down, and in just a minute, he gobbled again, and I could tell he was just right under the break from us, and we sat there a minute, and I done called, and turkey didn't gobble no more, but in a little bit, I seen him come strutting up. When he come up, he seen the decoy, and he comes up, and he never breaks out of strut, and he walks right up to the decoy, and he might have been 25 yards from us. Anyway, I got Trev on him, and he strutted around the decoy a couple of times, and finally, the turkey got just right, and he had a good beat on him, and he shot, and he killed him, and that was a pretty special day for me, you know, my son being 8 years old, and he got his first turkey. I think he weighed 22 pounds, had like a 10-inch beard.
That was a special day. I asked Garvin if he'd be willing to tell us what happened when he got hurt. He agreed. Here's his story.
In 2009, we had a bad ice storm. There was trees broke down all in my yard and stuff. But anyway, I had a feeder up out at guy's house that I worked with, and I had some tree stands up, and I wasn't hunting, but I thought, well, I'll just go out there and take that stuff down. And I got out there, and it was a cold, snowy day, and there was snow on the ground, probably 4 inches of snow, and I walked up, and I thought, well, I can get this tree stand down, but I didn't take my belt. When I walked up the tree, I was kind of hesitant, but I thought, well, I've done this forever, you know. I thought I can just snake up the tree here and walk up my climbing steps and take the stand down. But I had a lock on the chain. It was a lock on stand, and I got up there, and it was cold, and I had on some gloves, and I'd been in that stand probably a half a dozen times that fall, and there was a limb that come out from the side of the tree there, and I got up on the standing on the steps, and I had hold of the stand, and I thought, well, if I can just pull up just a little bit on this limb here, I can throw my leg over and set on top of this big limb and just unlock my stand and get my rope and let it down and just step back over on the step and come down the tree. But when I was pulling up, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I don't know if the limb was frozen. I don't think the limb was dead, but it broke with me. And I had so much pressure, and I was a hold of the stand, but it all happened so fast. I pulled loose from the stand, and I had enough awareness to try to kick out from the tree because I didn't want one of those steps to catch me on the way down, you know. So when I woke up, I guess it knocked me out, and I'm sure it did. I was just tingling all over, and I retched behind me, and there was a little cedar tree, and I got a hold of it. But I tried to move, but I couldn't. And I'd fallen about 20 feet. First thing I thought of was I left my cell phone in my truck. I remember pulling it out of my coveralls. And I was dressed pretty well, and thank goodness. And so when I left that morning, my friend's house, I told him, I said, I'm just going to be gone a little bit, and I'll be back. So after I looked at my watch, and it was about 10:25, then you wonder, are you going to lay here and freeze to death before anybody comes? And I knew I was hurt bad. And I'd laid there almost 2 hours, and I heard Dwight on his tractor coming around. And I thought, well, good. And I heard him come back, and I heard the tractor stop. And then about 10 or 15 minutes, I could hear him coming. He had two little Feist, Rat Terrier Feist mix dogs, and they'd went with me that morning, and they stayed right with me the whole time. Anyway, Dwight came, and I told him I was really cold, and I told him to go get me some blankets and try to get me some help. In a little bit, the ambulance came, and Dwight, in the meantime, had brought me some blankets and covered me up, and he never tried to move me or anything. And they finally came and got me and worked on me and packed me out. And I didn't know it, but I had a compound fracture in my leg. Anyway, they got me in and started to the hospital, and I flatlined 3 times. I remember the ambulance stopping, but I didn't know what was going on. So anyway, they got me into the hospital in Harrison and then checked me out and then took me on to Springfield and ended up, it paralyzed me from the right above the waist down, and I had surgery. And then I went on to Craig Hospital out in Colorado, and I stayed 103 days in the hospital in my rehab and stuff before I got to come home. And yeah, a rock hit me in the spine. It busted my vertebrae and bruised my spinal cord enough that it paralyzed me. Yeah, I just thank God for being with me and, give me a second chance in life, because I should have died. Being truthful with you, I was real hypothermic, and I remember laying there and praying for God to help me. You know, I didn't want to leave my wife and kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I was really thinking about at the time. After I got to come home and stuff, and I got home in June, and anyway, season come up, and it was a whole new learning experience. You know, I had to figure some things out. So I got me a couple of pop-up blinds, and I deer hunted that fall and stuff, and I was lucky I got to kill a deer, but anyway, come spring, I was stronger, and tried turkey hunting, now I can't get up and go to the turkeys like I used to could, but I've got a few places that I can go and get my blind, and I mainly hunt around edge of fields and some down logging roads and some of the timber I can get to, but you know, around some of the fields and where I can drive my truck or my side by side in and throw the blind up and just roll in there in my wheelchair and stuff. But I've seen where patience really come into effect since I'm hurt, you know, because I figured out a lot of birds that I've walked off and left, you know, and now that I can't move, I've sat there and I heard a lot of turkeys and turkeys come to you, you know, and I've killed a lot of turkeys now since I got hurt that I wouldn't have killed before, because I just wouldn't have given them enough time to come in, you know. So I've learned that patience is really a good thing on killing a turkey.
Garvin is a fighter who's not let the tough hand he's been dealt beat him down. He's continued to passionately hunt. He's killed a lot of turkeys, and he even says he's killed bigger whitetails since his accident. Patience is a powerful thing. I'm proud to know Garvin and to have been able to sit across the table from him as he told me his story. I'd say he's a real hero. What happened to him could have happened to any one of us who've spent our lives dangling from trees chasing whitetails and bears. Garvin's chosen to take the glass half full approach and be thankful that he's alive. I'd say that's an honorable thing. He was 49 years old when this accident happened in 2009. All these storytellers, some I've known my whole life and others I've recently met, carried the DNA of the American turkey hunter, which is characterized by a peculiar passion and dedication to this magnificent giant goblin bird which roams our woods and fields. I'm so grateful that the generations before us fought to save turkeys and their habitat. Despite some regions seeing downfalls in numbers, we've still got an incredible resource at our fingertips. I think it's important to stay active in the organizations dedicated to turkey conservation, like the National Wild Turkey Federation and the new group, Turkeys for Tomorrow. And I know there are many other groups helping wild turkeys. Long live the wild turkey, his habitat, and the hunt. I can't thank you guys and gals enough for listening to Bear Grease. Please leave us a review on iTunes and share our podcast with the best-intentioned but worst turkey hunter you know this week. We'll see you next week on The Render. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/grease.